Welcome to the Accessible South Africa Travel Podcast. This is a podcast where we discuss travel in South Africa and beyond for persons with disabilities and special needs with our host, Lois Strachan. Join us as we share inspiring stories of people who travel, exciting, accessible travel experiences, and showcase service providers who will accommodate those with special needs. And now, on with the show.
Hey there everyone, and welcome to today's episode of the Accessible South Africa Travel Podcast. I'm your host, Lois Strachan. Today we're talking to Renee Tembe, who is a Cape Town-based learning and development practitioner and a disability advisor. And we're chatting to Renee about some of her travels, both locally in South Africa and overseas. And she shares some really great stories with us. I just want to explain up front that we did have a few technical issues with this particular interview. And like they say, when technology works, it's great. But when it doesn't work, well. So we just want to apologize for those technical issues and hope you enjoy the interview anyway. So let's go right in and meet Renee. Today on the Accessible South Africa Travel Podcast, we're talking with Renee Tembe, who is a learning and development practitioner and a disability advisor. How are you doing today, Renee?
I'm very well. Thank you, Lois.
Great. And thanks so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
It is an absolute pleasure. Maybe we should start off by just asking you to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Okay, so I started out in recruitment many moons ago. And in my very first job, I was tasked with starting a disability desk, that is starting a database with candidates with disability and also a client list. That was in the mid-90s. And so that was my introduction to people with disabilities. I then moved into training and development. I'm now a registered assessor, facilitator, moderator, doing accredited training programs and qualifications, also with people with disabilities, but then also doing diversity and sensitization awareness programs for clients and for the integration of candidates into the workplace. And I've also done one or two workplace accessibility audits. And then my introduction to with my disability, in 1997, I was diagnosed with tendonitis in my wrists. It was bilateral. They then moved up into my elbows and then later into my shoulders. And in 2016, just as I moved to start out on my own, I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia, which is a chronic pain condition, which affects the central nervous system. It has 18 tender points. And so when traveling, I now need to use a wheelchair. So I remember when speaking to the specialists, they said to me, I need to use a wheelchair. And at that point, I was like, heck no, not happening. I can do it. I can travel. I can walk. And then you find that you're flat for 2 days after. And then you think again, you're like, no, I need to heed when the professionals speak. I need to listen. Now when I'm traveling for work or for family visits or holidays, I need to request a wheelchair.
Well, that's given us a great lead into my next question, which is, can you tell us a little bit about the traveling that you've done?
I always enjoyed travel. So in the late 90s, I was living in the UK for 3 years. I traveled extensively. I traveled to Germany, Spain, Israel. So travel bug has always been there. And then also with work now locally, I get to travel, to the centres, Joburg, Durban, Bloemfontein, as required. And then also my sister and her husband live in York, in the city of York, in Yorkshire in the UK. So we try and alternate 1 year either with them, the next year they with me, depending on where we're at and what we're doing. And, yeah, that can be quite exciting. Nice long haul flight. And then obviously when we visit them, we do lots of sightseeing. You know, when they're here, we've been to Kruger National Park on safari. You know, he likes shark cage diving. Not my favorite. But, you know, we do get around when we live together.
Oh, wow. So you're quite an extensive traveler and you've got quite a bit of experience. So we'll dig a little bit deeper into that during the course of the interview.
Sure.
So you've said that you use a wheelchair when you travel.
Yes.
But maybe we can dive a little deeper into the actual logistics of what is travel like for you? What are the logistics and how does it impact on you?
It's always requesting, it always entails a lot of planning. So you've got to think ahead. You've got to request the wheelchair, make sure that, you know, wheelchair has been requested. Because when you catch them unawares at the desk, sometimes the checking desk, and we can get all sorts of faces, ups and pups. So it's always booking a wheelchair up front. It's always making sure, you know, that your apps are working, your Uber app, your Google Maps, you know, if you've booked into a B&B or a hotel, you know, for work, that, you know, it is accessible, that there aren't any stairs leading up to your bedroom, you know, preferably ground floor if it is. And also checking with clients, you know, ahead of time, if it's venues outside of Cape Town, you know, is it accessible? Are there stairs? That kind of stuff. Yeah, that's locally. And then long haul flights. The dreaded 12-hour Cape Town to Heathrow flight can be quite daunting. But again, you know, making sure that you book an aisle seat so that you can get up and stretch. Because, you know, when you've sat for too long, you know, you can result in body stiffness, muscle spasms, you're unsteady, and you know, there's a bit of imbalance. And on the plane as well, you know, you're clutching seats as you walk. So as I board, I'm really saying to the flight attendant, you know, from time to time, I will require to walk in your galley area. Obviously, not during meal prep times, but when it's quiet, just to stretch my legs, you know, do a couple of paces. First time you mention that to them, they kind of go, okay, they get uncomfortable. But when they see what you're doing, it's, oh, okay. And so when you get up the second time, then, you know, they kind of know what you're going to do. So it's just walking a few steps and then, you know, bending the knees and that kind of thing. And as opposed to walking up and down the aisles when everyone's sleeping and bumping everyone and waking them up. So, you know, that helps so that you're not completely stiff from sitting all the time. And, yeah, that's for long haul, yes.
So it's a lot of preparation and also the ability to explain to others what you might need and what you're doing or going to be doing.
Absolutely. I think, you know, when you're kind of boarding and you're with special assistance and you are loaded in onto the plane through the pilot's door, which is quite cool. I've learned now. I've just learned to enjoy it. So, you know, you board and, you know, you just, it seems as if you're treated like, you know, one size fits all. Everybody has the same requirements, but I make a concerted effort to say, you know, this is what I need, so that, you know, you don't bug them sort of mid-flight and say, you know, as I board, I say, you know, this is what I'm going to need, blah, blah, blah. Yes, they're in a hurry because they're trying to get everybody on the plane, but, you know, so I'll chat to you later on when I need it, so that they know up front this is what I'm going to be. I'm going to be in their space for a little bit.
And you generally find that the people that you engage with are willing to help and
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I haven't had any, you know, sort of fun experiences on a plane, except for maybe hand luggage, I try not to travel with hand luggage because I can't lift anything into the overhead compartment. And on a particular airline, don't do that. So I have to ask a fellow passenger to lift any hand luggage into the overhead compartment. So I try not to travel with any sort of hand luggage. I'll just have my handbag and that'll be it. And then I book in my big bag and that's it.
Wow. So that's quite a, I mean, for me, that would have a huge impact because so much of the things that I need to have with me.
Yeah.
So, wow.
Yeah, but especially when you're traveling for work and you've got your laptop bag. Right, then I've got to book four. Locally, it's fine. International flights, where the problem is, where they refuse to look anything overhead. So I've got to wait for a passenger to board and then say, pretty please, can you pop that in there for me? And people are generally quite helpful, I have to say. Yes. You know, except when they're in a rush. If it's the first couple of people coming in, you know, and the plane's not that busy yet, it's quite cool, but later on as people start piling in and, you know, when it causes the backups, the pylons, as I call them, that's not the time to ask.
I can understand that because, yeah, there's a lot going on at that time.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's covered a fair number of logistics from a perspective that I haven't really thought about before. So thanks for sharing that those insights with us. Let's move on to some of the technologies that you use when you travel. And technologies, I can mean pretty much anything in terms of assistive technology, apps, any kind of devices that you use. You've already mentioned a wheelchair.
Yes.
So what do you use? What makes travel easier for you?
Uber. I have to have Uber on my phone. Uber Assist, preferably. And then WhatsApp notes helps. Quite easy to do, especially when you're walking. You know, there's no time to sort of punch in, type out a message. Just easy to do the voice note. Google Maps also with voice recognition, voice commands. Also when I'm driving, so that's pretty cool. So I was horrified to find out about 2 years ago when I was training in Plum that when I arrived at the airport that there's no Uber. So I got to the information desk and I said, you know, I'm not picking up Uber on my app. It's nothing's happening. And she said, no, we don't have Uber. You're going to have to, you know, get a taxi. Luckily, you know, a colleague and I, we met up. We were traveling together and then we found a very nice taxi and taxi driver. And he took us to where we needed to be, gave us his number, collected us the next day, took us back and forth to the venue, and the following day back to the airport. So that was quite cool. But just, we become so spoiled sometimes that we don't realize that there's Uber's not everywhere.
I guess it's one of the assumptions we make, you know, it's just, okay. Great. And when you say you use voice notes, in what sort of capacity would you use those as a traveler?
If I'm chatting to my sister, especially at the airport, you know, just give an update on where I'm at. And you're generally fatigued after a 12-hour flight. So it'd be easy just to send her a voice note once I've arrived, just to say, you know, I've landed safely, one lap down, one more to go. Because generally when I travel to visit her, I've got to catch a connecting flight from Heathrow on to leave Bradford to get to York. You know, it's just so that she's aware of where I'm at, and it's easier than to type out a message because at that point your muscles are quite tired and you're weary and everything becomes an effort. And I use it here as well. A lot of the time, it's just easier.
It is, and quicker.
Yes, absolutely.
Great. Thanks for explaining that. I'm sure, and I know from previous conversations that you and I have had, that you have some absolutely fascinating stories about your travels. So let's chat a bit about some of the challenges that you've faced when traveling and how you've overcome them.
Yes, my favorite story, as you know, Lois, is when I was abandoned and deserted in a terminal at Heathrow Airport. And that was when I was arriving, I was flying back home. And on the early morning flight from Leeds Bradford, landed at Heathrow. And there were three of us are wheelchair users, right? The two ladies, their flights were more imminent. I arrived at 9 o'clock in the morning and my flight was only at 6 in the early evening. So I had lots of time to kill. And I understood, because, yeah, obviously flights, local flights are unlimited, as they are here from East London or anywhere else. So I had lots of time to kill at Heathrow. However, you know, the two ladies went off and the special assistant said to me, you know, someone will be around to, will come around with a wheelchair to assist you. So I sat and I sat and a plane landed and people walked through the gates and everybody left. And because it's a local flight, no one uses the baggage area. So the baggage area was completely deserted and there was me sitting waiting. And no one, occasionally someone would trickle through, but it looked like you know, your maintenance cleaning staff. So I couldn't really ask them about special assistance. And I think it was about 2 hours. Eventually, and it was 2 hours and 40 minutes. That's how long I was sitting there. Eventually, in total, but, you know, a gentleman came through, looked like it was an early lunch break. He came out of one of the offices. The doors are sealed. He came through, and I said, at the point, I hadn't eaten. I hadn't had a water to drink. So I thought I'd do all of these things because I had all this time at the airport. No medication, couldn't go to the bathroom just in case I missed someone, you know, coming with a wheelchair. So I was sat there for two hours, 40 minutes in total. And then, you know, when he came past, I think I might have been tearful. I think I was trying to be cool. You know, I said, please, can you help me? And he said, what's the matter? And he said, oh, come with, can you walk? I said, yes, I can walk. And, you know, we walked. He said, the office not far. Please come with me. We'll make a call. And we did that. And they very kindly offered me some water in the office. And someone gave me their packet of nuts that they were going to have as a snack to eat so I could take my meds. And, you know, within minutes, special assistance was there. So I sent them an email on my return to say, you know, this is what happened. And for me, the problem seemed to stem from the assistants chopping and changing. So they get their requests on an app on their phone of which passenger they need to assist and where the passenger needs to go. But they seem to be chopping and changing amongst themselves. And that's what caused, I got lost in the system, basically. So I sent an email to Heathrow customer services. I received a response saying, you know, apologies. We really apologize for what's happened. We will investigate, look into it, and obviously chat to our service provider with regards to that. So that was my first, that was my, I can laugh about it now, you know, it's funny. But when it was happening, it wasn't, it was quite stressful. After that, you know, once I was in special assistance and things just went really smoothly, it was fine.
Yeah.
So that was the one challenge. The second one was arriving at Leeds Bradford and then being met by the special assistance person in a wheelchair. And then I said to her, you know, because most people fly locally. So I got my big bag, you know, at the baggage area, we have to go and get that. And she nearly went bananas. She said to me, what? I must push you and the bag? How big is this bag? And, you know, she kept panicking. And after a 20-hour flight, my tolerance was a bit low. So I said to her, please just help me out of my thinking was, just get me out of this wheelchair. I need to think straight and I can just help myself. Please just go, I said.
Yeah.
I said, please just go. I'll figure it out myself. And, you know, luckily for me, there was a very nice couple standing close by. They heard the conversation. And the gentleman said to me, you know, can I help you? You know, just let me know where your bag is and I'll get it off the conveyor for you, which he did. And then he wheeled it. And I said, if you can just wheel it to the trolley area for me. However, at Leeds Bradford Airport, you need a £1 coin to put in the chain to release the trolley.
As happens in many airports. Yes, so it's quite a common thing.
I just arrived. I bought coffee on my card. I had no coins on me. I had to beg for £1 coin. So someone did assist me again, and that's why I say people are just generally quite helpful, and managed to release the trolley, and someone lifted the bag onto the trolley for me, which was cool because I could then support myself by pushing the trolley to my loved ones who were waiting for me. And you know what I've realized is that I only ever have traveled long haul on my own. I've never had anyone travel with me, and that's part of the problem, is that there's no one to assist you. So, you know, they've got to be concerned about pushing you in the wheelchair and a big bag.
But you can't be the only person that's happened to, because, I mean, okay, I understand that the special assistance person is got their hands occupied with the wheelchair.
Yeah.
But surely there must be processes in place for then what if the passenger also has a bag?
Doesn't seem like it, because I sent them an email as well. I mean, it seemed to be an empathetic response, which was awesome. And that, you know, their staff is due to be going on awareness training in the next month. I hope they have. It was also said to me in the email that next time I fly or pass through, I must, you know, send them an email beforehand so that, you know, they can assist me and so that the same thing doesn't happen. My problem was, what happens to someone else who traveled the next day with the same problem? And why should I be alerting you via email that I'll be passing through the airport? I definitely will be making contact with them when I visit again. To say, hello, I'm arriving. Please can you roll the red carpet, which is not what I want. It should just be an easy process. You know, I should be able to fill it out on the ticket request, you know, what my requests are. And
yes,
I shouldn't have to send an email beforehand. And my problem is not everyone has access to your email address to say, look, I'll be arriving, I need this, that, and the other. And I understand that everyone has different requests, but
Yes, I can imagine. Yeah. Hi, I and my luggage will be arriving on Tuesday at 10 a.m.
Please ensure that two special assistance persons are waiting for me. No, we don't want that.
Wow. I've never had to interview someone who's had that particular kind of problem. It sounds, I've just chat to a couple of my colleagues and find out what advice they have, because that sounds like quite a particular situation. But yes, wow.
I definitely will have a pound coin on hand next time. I've learned. You learn as you go along, yeah.
I think it's so great that you are now able to laugh at these situations. I'm sure at the time that your response might not have been quite so.
Not at all. You know, now when I tell the story, I can laugh about it. And I say, oh, we were in cabin abandoned, deserted terminal. It was pretty raw at the time, and I was not going to repeat the story, you know, couple of times over. It was just, no. But, you know, you also learn as you go along. You learn to laugh, and I think that's the important part.
Yes. So along with these quite challenging experiences, like every traveler, I'm sure you must also have your favorite stories about great things that you've seen and experienced and that have happened.
Yes. I think when you travel locally, you know, sometimes you're the only person in a wheelchair or you're one of two others. But when you travel long haul and you are in the special assistance area, you realize how many people there are that need assistance. I remember sitting in the special area waiting. You know, it was close to my time where I needed to board to fly to Leeds, and a group of about, like I said, 10 to 15 people arrived in wheelchairs in a group. They were all together. They all knew each other. And it was just amazing to me that there were so many people taking to the airwaves, requiring assistance, and that they weren't letting, you know, the whole experience of sitting in a wheelchair let them down, regardless they were going to their destination. So it's one way of feeling that you're not alone, but you also realize the impact of disability on and you know, amongst travelers, and that it is, you know, quite prevalent.
I think that brings up a very important point, and that is the need for tourism and hospitality service providers to be aware of the growing population that is going to utilize accessible services.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think there's such an awareness around, people with disabilities, not just people with disabilities, but around universal access. Not just for people with disabilities, for anyone, who's had an accident and now needs to be on crutches, or, someone who's had an off and has restricted mobility for a short period of time. People have accidents and they need to go on holiday. So, how do you accommodate them? I think there's such an awareness that no company wants to be left behind or should be left behind. There's so many things that you can, the general stuff that they can do. I think, just the simple stuff, get the simple stuff right. Parking bays, accessible bathrooms and toilets, making sure that, there's seating where there aren't any steps so someone can enter with a wheelchair, or a dropping off area even. Sometimes if it's a restaurant or, an office where it's in a main road and there's no parking, sort of just a drop off area for someone who is a wheelchair user. That will make things so much easier. Instead of having to phone beforehand and say, is there any area, is there a parking bay, that I can utilize before I get there, blah, blah, blah. If you have the cognizance to remember that you need to do that before you go, it doesn't always happen. Sometimes you just get there and think, where to park now, or where to go, or how do I get, I see there's no ramp, that kind of thing. But just the little things to start off with. Service providers would just start there and look at that. There are too many requirements to cater for, and we're not saying everything should be in place, but, just the basic ones, so that you're not caught being left behind.
And I think you've kind of covered a fair amount in that response as well. And in fact, my next question has just flown out the window, because it was going to be, what advice would you give to a service provider?
Sorry.
But you've already covered that. So let's move swiftly on. No, but I think it's very true. There's some simple changes that service providers can make, like effective ramps instead of small mountains.
Absolutely.
And just awareness. I think that that's a great starting point for any organization wanting to make themselves more accessible and more able to be enjoyed and used as a service provider. And not just by people in wheelchairs, because a drop-off area will help someone who's visually impaired as well, because someone can just drop them and say, it's close to the door. And as well, there are a number of people who may not be in a wheelchair but aren't able to walk long distances.
For sure.
Aren't comfortable. People who are elderly as well.
Definitely.
So, it doesn't just help someone in a wheelchair. It's got a far broader reach than just that.
Definitely. Just like I was saying, it's just the little stuff. I've seen some amazing things in amazing places where, there's a disability sign on the door, but, if you look at the space of the door and you think there's no way a wheelchair will get through there.
Or I think you and I had a discussion about one of the places quite close to where I stay in Cape Town that has an accessible bathroom facilities that, first of all, has a wall that's blocking the entrance, and then the doorway isn't wide enough.
Yeah, there are lots of examples. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Do you have any other advice to offer to service providers who are looking to try and make themselves more accessible?
Speak to people with disabilities. They'll tell you what they need. They really will tell you what they need instead of you trying to figure out what it is that they need. I've seen too many scary things, you know, with a place and it's so far away with a the toilet itself is so far away from the toilet roll.
Yeah.
You know, that those kinds of things. You know, try it yourself and see if it works. If it doesn't work for you, it probably won't work for, you know, but get someone who with a disability, ask them to try and, you know, check out your facilities. And just to give it, do sort of like a dry run just to see, you know, what is it that we need. Because, you know, it's one thing to say we need to put this in and we have to put them in. If it's not practical, it doesn't serve the purpose.
Oh, that's so true.
Yeah.
And one of the other phrases that you've used a couple of times in a previous conversation is that one size doesn't fit all. Maybe
Absolutely.
A little bit of thought around that one.
Yeah, no. Like I'm saying, we all have different requirements and it's impossible to cater to everyone's needs. You know, disabled isn't disabled. You know, you and I could have the same condition, but we'll have different requirements. I might be able to walk very easily across a stretch of floor, or, you know, a flat surface. You might not be able to do it unaided. So even though we've got the same condition, you know, so you need to know, you need to ask, and you need to know that there are different types of disabilities. If you just looked at me, you wouldn't say there's anything wrong with me. And people go like, oh, but you look fine. You know, it's an invisible illness. You know, up until I've sat for a bit and I need to get up. And then you'll see, uh-oh. Ooh, lots of moaning and groaning going on. But, you know, so there's no one size fit all. It doesn't fit the box for everybody. You've got to look at different options. And that's why it's so important to ask. You know, ask the question, what is it that you need? How can we assist you? How can we best assist you? You know, it's just one size fits all doesn't work for everybody.
And I suppose in many senses, that makes it more difficult for a service provider to understand what those needs are and possibly to err on the side of caution.
You like, yeah.
Yeah. Renee, it's been absolutely fantastic chatting to you and hearing some of your insights of your own travel and some of the lessons that we can take from them. But one of the questions that I'd like to finish off with in the podcast is to ask the people that I'm speaking to what advice they would give to a person, a traveler with a disability, who's wanting to travel but is a little uncertain about doing it.
What would you
say to them?
I would say to them, absolutely do it. You know, I've seen too many people with disabilities. You know, we look at someone with a disability and we think, oh, you know, is the story of how it happened or, you know, are they dealing with an illness? But there's always another story, and the other story always entails resilience, determination, and adaptability, most importantly. And I see that in, I call them my tribe because, you know, we are in a tribe and I love my people. I see the determination. Sometimes, you know, when I'm working with people with disabilities, I'm like, oh, geez, how are you going to do that? You know, my first instinct is also still to say, can I help you? And a lot of the time it'll be, no, I'm okay, I can do it myself. And then you just go, yay. You know, so when, you know, absolutely take that trip, do that travel. You know, you'll figure it out as you go along. Yes, there might be frustrations, huffing and puffing along the way. But you know what? You'll live to tell the tale of how you got lost or were deserted in a terminal. you know, we find a way. And that's the most important part is, you know, you've got nothing to lose. And just everything to gain. And if not, then a tale to tell at the end of it. There's so many, you know, there's such an awareness now on people with disabilities and accommodations that they, you know, they are, oh no, we can't go because so and so or he or she won't be able to. Those days are gone. It can be done and it should be done.
Great. Thank you for those thoughts. Renee, thank you so much. It's been absolutely wonderful chatting to you today and having you on the podcast with us. I really appreciate your time and your stories.
Many stories, Lois.
I think we all have stories, but in sharing those stories, we can help others who maybe one day might experience the same situation. So stories are a great way to learn as well.
Absolutely. I agree with you. I couldn't agree more.
Wonderful. Renee, thank you so much. It's been great to chat to you.
Thanks, Lois.
I really enjoyed having the opportunity of chatting to Renee Tembe, and it was great to have her join us for the interview. We do want to just again apologize for the quality of the call. I promise we weren't being invaded by aliens, even though it might have sounded like it. Now it's time for the service provider spotlight. On today's spotlight, we're traveling not to a place, but to an equipment supplier, Freedom Walkers. Freedom Walkers are based in Cape Town, and they provide custom-made mobility aids for children. These walking frames are reasonably priced, as we've said, and they allow children the gift of independence for those who need a little bit of extra support when walking. To find out more details, read some reviews, and to see some photographs of their products, you can go to the Accessible South Africa Travel website on www.accessiblesouthafrica.co.za and find the information under the Equipment Suppliers tab. And as always, we suggest that you do this so you can see in detail before making contact with the service provider whether their products can serve your personal needs. Thanks, everyone. I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast, and I look forward to chatting to you again next time.
That's it from us for this time. You can find Accessible South Africa on the web at accessiblesouthafrica.co.za or on Facebook and Instagram at Accessible South Africa or on Twitter at AccessibleSA. You can also email us at podcast@accessiblesouthafrica.co.za. Editing by Deirdre Gower. Our theme music is by Louis Chichau, based on a motif by Lois Strachan. Credits read by Andre de Toy, the Big Positive Guy. Thanks for joining us on Accessible South Africa Travel Podcast. We'll see you next time. And until then, happy travels.